drugging me for. My name's Ken. I'm an alcoholic, drug addict, and all the above. Yes. Funny, you know, coming into this room, I remember coming here. God, it must be about 7 years ago, 8 years ago, and there's a gentleman here who remembers me from before, and there just happened to be a business meeting going on down the hall there, and he's a member of the group, and I remember distinctly, like, seeing these people in this room, and I thought you had to be, like, real important to be in that room, you know, that's where all the winners were, and I couldn't understand what you had to do to get in that room, but I really wanted to go in that room. You know, and in this room here, well, you know, there was it's changed quite a bit. There was at least 75 to 100 people. There were couches all the way in the back as well as the site, and I enjoyed that because at the time when I was trying to get sober there, I wasn't in a safe place at home, and I used to come here and sleep. You know, and I felt the reason I was able to sleep is because I felt okay. You know, I felt at peace. I felt safe, but only for that short time I was in here. You know, and then it ended, meeting ended, and I had to go home to hell again. Anyway, that's just part of the middle of my story. I'll start at the beginning. You know, I'm from England. I was come from a sort of middle upper class parents, three sisters and two brothers, none of whom sort of suffered from this disease. And you know, growing up in England, in the area I grew up at, it was just outside of Manchester. It was a it was a pretty rough area, and sort of the only entertainment we had was fighting and drinking. You know, so at a very early age I got introduced to drinking because it worked, because I wasn't this tough person, I wasn't this tough persona, you know, but the alcohol turned me into that. You know, and we would do very strange things, like pull families out of the house in the middle of the night and beat the crap out of them and burn the house down. Normal stuff like that, you know. And I think after a while I sort of had a conscience, and it didn't seem right. You know, I was at that time, I was 15, 16 years old. I was a full-blown, what you would call today, a Nazi, neo-Nazi skinhead, and lived the way they lived. And I wasn't feeling comfortable about what I was doing. Anyway, a lot of my story actually involves drugs, but I won't go into that. Basically what happened, I got introduced to heroin, and it took the pain of what I did away for a while, but it lasted 22 years. Mid-70s, my family decided to come over here to Montreal, and I had no idea of what Montreal was to offer. You know, as far as I knew, you know, it was cold, you know, and it was up north of the United States. So upon arriving here, you know, it's funny how this sort of disease, and it mentions it in the big book, it follows us. You know, I didn't have any intent to carry on the old life. I had quit the heroin for a while, stopped, tapered down my drinking, because at that time back in England, now I'm getting arrested for fighting, and I'm doing, facing some time, but my father was pretty wealthy, and he managed to get me out of these jackpots. So coming to Montreal, sort of a verbal agreement between me and him that I was smart man. So I think within, it wasn't even a week, you know, I came here, first of all, don't speak a word of French, you know, and what are you putting me in here for anyway? You know, like, you know, I don't understand what you people are talking about. Go and take the bus, and this guy's talking a foreign language to me. I want to hit him and stuff like that. So I'm getting a little angry now. So I'm getting a little thirsty, because that's the only way I can release my anger. So I end up in a place called Café Campus. I learned French in about a week, you know. No, actually, I was talking to my girlfriend before. There's a regular places around here, Tiffany's, you know, Station 10, with the warehouse, 2020, which all of which, for some reason, don't exist anymore. I think Station 10 still does, but It's interesting the way, you know, and it just progressed and progressed and progressed, and now I'm getting into other kind of jackpots. I'm getting arrested again. I'm doing a little bit of jail time, and, you know, my father is again getting on my back, and he's saying, listen, Ken, this isn't working out. What you need to do is settle down, you know? So basically what happened is I never really had a girlfriend, you know. I was more interested in the booze and drugs. That was what I was married to, and but I knew this one woman, one girl who I used to frequent at a restaurant, you know, and just say hello, you know. So I went into the restaurant one day and said, saying hello, I said, will you marry me? And she said, yes. And that's basically how it happened. And we got married, lasted 14 years. I have two children who are now 23 and 24 years old. And I'd say after about 6 months, the marriage was finished. But we had purchased a house. I was living in the basement. She was upstairs, as long as I was taking care of the business, meaning paying the mortgage and stuff like that. She was okay about it. But you see, I never really realized I had a problem because, you know, I was sort of a functioning alcoholic drug addict. And the way I would function is because I'd be able to blame somebody for my problems. It's her, you know. If it wasn't for her on my back, I wouldn't have this problem, you know. If it wasn't for them, I wouldn't be doing it. If it wasn't for my dad telling me I had to meet her, you know, so it's his problem. So then my dad dies, so I can't blame him anymore, you know. And my mom is... by then, my parents had moved to Newfoundland, and... my mom sort of asked her, like, said enough is enough, you know, because by that time I'm scamming them out of money. My dad practically bought this house for me. When we lost the house, somehow or another, there was a little over $250,000 missing, you know, and the house was practically paid for. So, you know, do the math, go figure. So I know I'm jumping around a lot here, but it was just the insanity of it all. So what was it, 1992, my wife at the time, I came home from one of my weekends, which was regular. I would leave Thursday night and come back Sunday night, you know, because I'd met this other female up in St. Agathe, and it was, you know, it was perfectly normal to do something like that. And came home, and all of a sudden, you know, the doors are locked, you know, and I see this garbage bag outside, and I figure, you know, like, what the hell have I done? You know, there must be a mistake, you know. So I start to pound on the door. Next thing I know, she opens it, slaps me on the face, closes the door. The cops are at the door. Within 5 minutes, they've got a restraining order against me not to go near the house. Again, I'm thinking, I haven't even done anything, you know, and I'm trying to explain this to the cops. And this isn't the first time the police have been, you know. I was a regular in I was living in Villestarron at the time, you know. We were almost on first name basis with these cops, you know. I mean, at one time they would come, and I just share this little bit here of the insanity of it all. And when she tried to tell me I had a problem, and my usual answer to her was like, F you, you know, you've got a problem. So I remember one time she had picked up this frying pan and she was going to hit me with it, and all I did was restrain her arm. Next thing I know, I'm being led away in handcuffs for assault. I mean, Jesus Christ, it was a cast iron frying pan that was going to hit my head, but again, I don't have a problem. So, yeah, this is around the early 90s, now 92. Remember I said I had two daughters. Now I've got responsibilities, you know. I want to see these kids. I didn't give a shit about these kids before, you know. Now all of a sudden I want to see them, you know, they're my daughters. You know, so I have to go through the courts, through social workers and stuff like that. And one interesting thing about this is I had to get my wife's consent. And she said I could have 2 hours, I think it was either on a Saturday or a Sunday, under social worker supervision plus my wife. On one condition, you tell me how old your daughters are. I couldn't remember. You know, I think I was off by about 3 years. You know, I mean, that's sad. So anyway, what better thing to do than to beat myself up more, you know? I mean, again, with the booze and the drinking, and... how old am I then, you know? I'm in my mid-late 20s, and, you know, I remember once going up... towards the end, going up to St. Agathe again, and... there was this bar that I got barred from, you know, and I had another fellow with me, and I got real upset with him, you know, and ended up, we took his tow truck and we took out the front of the bar with the tow truck. And for me, you know, again, that was something normal, but what I didn't realize, the bar was owned by the bikers, you know, and it took a while to get out of that jackpot, let me tell you about. You know, it was just, you know, one thing after another until I finally realized that, you know, like maybe, you know, it's time to grow up, you know. And how that really happened is at one of the meetings with one of the social workers, she said, you know, it seems that you do have a problem, you know, have you ever tried doing anything about it? You know, there's rehabilitation centers, there's AA, you know, CA, NA, you know, there is help out there if you want it. But again, I was ignorant to the fact that, you know, I didn't have a problem. But it came to a point now where I was court ordered in order to even visit with my children, to see them, to go to 3 meetings a week. And that's how I got introduced to the fellowship. So from 1992 to 1997, I went through this revolving door, you know. I went to meetings, I tried CA, I tried NA, I tried AA. And like I said, you know, it was, unless you're willing, unless you've really had enough, you know, and you want to be honest with yourself and tell you that, you know, enough of the bullshit, because the only person I was lying to was myself. Was, I want to get sober. I want to get clean. You know, and so I decided to do one of the first few suggestions, get a sponsor. I got a sponsor. You know, and he suggested, listen, I told him a little bit about my past. You know, I was very secretive about that part, you know, because you know, when it came down to working the steps later, I always said this certain stuff I've done I wouldn't tell a dog to, you know. Well, the bottom line is, you know, the person I told it to has practically done the same thing too, and we have to, you know, one of the things is to be able to forgive ourselves, but, you know, I didn't learn that until later. Anyway, this gentleman who is here tonight suggested, you know, you keep out of relationships, you know. Learn to live with yourself first, you know. So I remember distinctly, I think it was like a couple of months, you know, and I met this girl, but I phoned him up and said, I know what you're going to say, but this time it's different, you know, this time you don't understand, it's different, you know. And I said, Ken, you know, I made a suggestion to you, it's up to you to start. I said, well, she's not a drug, she's not a drink, it's a human being, you know. Well, I used women the same way I used the booze and drugs. You know. Anyway, I didn't take his suggestion. I got deep into this relationship, and I had never really tried cocaine before, because it wasn't really my drug of choice. Booze and heroin was, and I tried several detoxes to get off the heroin until I met somebody who finally said, "Listen, have you ever done coke? You know, it's a great way to get off the smack." You know, and I said, "No, not really." So I did, and in a way, thank God for it, because that made me hit my bottom 10 times harder, you know. And it's funny, you know, I remember telling this guy who's here tonight about this certain woman, and saying, yes, but we're not having sex. And then a couple of weeks later, yeah, we had sex, but it wasn't really, you know, meant to be, you know, it was a mistake, you know. And I mean, I'm lying to myself, you know. And funny enough, you know, this lasted about a year and a half. And by now I am not going to jail anymore, you know. I'm not being arrested, I'm going to hospital, you know, because the booze and the drugs has infected me so much. But I had ruptured a valve in the back of my heart. I was bleeding internally. I couldn't understand why I couldn't walk for half an hour and then passing out, you know. I thought, you know, maybe it's the effect of something, you know, but went to see a doctor, and he said, listen, you know, you're damn lucky to be alive. And he explained to me what I had done and what's happening to me right now. Right now I had something called endocarditis, which is a valve infection, which basically means your valve opens up and you're bleeding inside. You know. And that really didn't bother me, you know. So, you know, sooner or later, this program gets you, you know, whether you want it or not. I don't know how the miracle happens, and I don't want to know. You know, I remember someone telling me once, there's a secret here. You know, but you've got to find out what it was. I still don't know what that secret is. I don't care to know. All I know is it works. So I came, I had done a few rehabs, and one of them being Beaver. And I, in October 25th, 1997, that was the last time I drank and used. The next day I phoned up Beaver and I said, I need help. You know, so they suggested inpatient. I said, no, I've already done that. I want outpatient. So I think within a week they managed to get me an outpatient. You know, it was a 5-week program. I did 4 weeks. And then after joining the third week, beginning of the fourth, they called me into the office, and I figured they were going to tell me I graduated or something, you know, because I hadn't used in those 3 weeks or drank, you know. I was actually feeling a little bit good, you know. And basically what happened, they said, listen, we think your situation at home is dangerous for you. We want you to go in, patient, for another 5 weeks. Fuck, that's 9 weeks, you know. I mean, when I think back now, 9 weeks is just a little raindrop compared to, you know, what I've been through ahead of that. So I did the 9-week program, and the therapist at the time suggested, you know, upon graduation, at the goodbye group, that I get out where I am, you know, because it is dangerous for me, and because she was still an active cocaine user, and... But I was having different plans in my head. I was thinking if she saw me, she would see me as an example and stop. You know? It didn't work out that way. I lived with that woman for another year and a half. You know? Didn't use, didn't drink. But I was fucking angry. You know? I was starting to get the program a little bit. You know, I had got a new sponsor. And I remember, I don't know if it was here on Monday nighters, getting my 3-month chip, and he gave me a poker chip, you know, and for me that was an insult. Everybody else was getting these nice big bronze things, you know, and so I fired him, you know, and one of the things about Alcoholics Anonymous is, you know, when you make a mistake, somebody may point it out to you, but in a subtle way. You know, so it was subtly suggested I get a new sponsor and get working on this program. So, you know, I'd read how it works. I'd be plenty of times I'd heard the steps read, you know. But one thing that came to mind first, after those 3 months, there was a word in here which hit me right in the middle of the head, and that was honesty. You know, it's mentioned 3 times in the first paragraph of how it works. And I think that's what changed me around. And I figured, well, fuck, you know. Not only am I a pathological liar now, you know, that's added on to my drug addiction, to my alcoholism, to my this, to that, you know, because it was during a situation at work where I remember telling my boss one thing, and so I'd really done something else. I think I've had like 20 family members die, you know, mysteriously. That's the reason I couldn't show up for work. But it was getting to the point now, I didn't remember what lie I told to who, and you know, so I just had to drop down all this bullshit and just start telling the truth, you know, who exactly I am. And that's where I started to work the program. You know, and slowly things started to change. It wasn't easy at the beginning for me, you know. You know, I really admire people who come in without a rehab and really get this program right away. You know, and the young people too. That's great. You know, I came in the last time when I was 39 years old. You know, was when I got sober. You know, So yeah, I started to work on the steps, you know, and I started at step one. I started at step one, you know, and I'm still at step one. I have done the other steps, but I am still an alcoholic, and my life had become unmanageable due to the fact of the alcoholism, you know. And the rest, you know, after step three is where the action starts, and that's where the fear was at the beginning. And I broke down the barrier again, too. I said, fuck it. If I can stick a needle in my arm 20 times a day, I can take a crack at this. So I did, you know, and once it was over, what a relief, you know. Now I like to stay, you know, I say I stay in steps 10, 11, and 12. I love step 12 because I love helping people. I've been sponsoring people out of Addington House for the last 4.5, 5 years, you know. The last year or so I hadn't been up there as much as before, but before that I was up every Saturday, sometimes on a Sunday. You know, now I'm going back there again. I've got two guys up there now who are, you know, one of them's doing pretty well. One of them, I see me and him, and I'm telling him how full of shit he is. And yes, but you don't understand. And I just want to shake him and say, it fucking works, man. Just open your mind. Just give yourself a chance. But I know I can't. It has to be at his pace. You know? The benefits of this program... When I was in when I was in hospital in 1988, well, that was one of the last times me and my mother talked. I'd seen her previously in 1981 at my father's funeral in Newfoundland. But she basically said she didn't have a son anymore. You know, and one of the first things I wanted to do once I got sober was go back to England and tell all my brothers and sisters I'm sober, I got 3 months, fuck you, you know. Okay, but my sponsor sort of subtly suggested, not now, wait. So what was it, 3 years ago I went back to England. Now I got a mother who I hadn't seen in 25 years, a sister in 27 years. And same with my other brother and sister, 20 odd years, I don't know. And it went great, you know. At that time I was a little over three and a half years sober. I went to meetings out there. First I went to Scotland and... you know, walking into the rooms. It was kind of interesting because it was I had to go through a bar to get to this meeting in, just outside of Edinburgh. And basically what happened was, get into this bar, walk into this room, and I see these three, or five, whatever it was, I don't remember now, at least three of them, big burly skinheads in full gear, you know, tattoos up here. And I'm thinking, shit, I'm home, you know, what's going on here? And they turn around and they say, "Hi, I'm Bill, I'm an alcoholic, would you like a cup of tea?" You know? And it's like, jeez, you know? It's like, doesn't matter where you are, you know? As soon as you walk through those doors, you know, you feel at home. You know, I connected back with my mother even though she didn't want to see me. You know, she told me over the phone before I came, "Ken, it's not a good idea right now. You know, maybe next year," but I was determined to go anyway. My sister sort of enabled the situation. So I went over there. It was beautiful. You know, I went over there with intent to make amends to her. But I could see from the response I had from her, she was happy with who she's looking at now. And she was, 75, 76 years old at the time, and I didn't really want to hurt her anymore. You know, because she doesn't really know the program. All she knows is that her son is doing well. And basically all she said about the past was that she was so happy that I'm not saying those bad words anymore. You know, because I used to swear and curse at her. I used to swear and curse at my... I didn't give a shit, you know. Hit me. Hit me more, you know. know. This year we went back again, me and Claudia, you know. And it was just beautiful, you know, going back and seeing my sisters and mom again, and my niece who works for the airline, they had a little surprise for us, so, you know, we went back in first class, you know, and returned to Canada business class, you know, these bucket seats, and you're not even taking off the, I mean, she's coming with the champagne and the wine and the this and the orange juice, you know, and, you know, it felt good to be, you know, it felt good to be human. You know, it felt good to be able to do something. Like, to some people, it's no big deal going to England, going to Europe. People do it every week, you know. But now this is the fourth year in a row we've had a vacation. 2 years before that, we went to Cape Cod. You know, I mentioned about my daughters. You know, I mean, before I got sober, the last visions my daughters had of me was being taken away in handcuffs. That was sort of a weekly or bi-weekly thing, you know. Now it's going great. You know, I don't see them as much as I'd like to. I mean, they're 23, 24, they've got their own life. One goes to university, one is bringing up her son. You know, I'm a grandfather, you know. It's, you know, I've heard it here before, you've heard it, the program gave me my life back, you know. But I would like to go one step further. The program's given me a life. I don't believe I had a life before I came here. You know? And it's taught me, teaching me how to live. I still make a few mistakes now and then. You know, I still have problems with my temper sometimes and anger, but it's nothing compared to before. Nothing. You know? And I take suggestions now. You know? And I like who I am today, you know. I remember that's one thing that Sean told me, is, you know, before you love anyone, you got to love yourself, you know. And I couldn't really understand that. It took quite a long time to understand that, you know, because for me, love was a very foreign word. I couldn't say to anybody, I love you, you know. It was a dangerous word for me, you know, because that... You know, I could give you millions of reasons. It's because I never heard it from my parents or some stuff like that. But the bottom line is, you know, is I had to put down all that bullshit and start looking at stuff and start to grow up. And it took a while, you know. And I live this program on a daily basis, you know, because I know how. I know where it can lead me if I go too far ahead. You know, they say if you want to make God laugh, tell him your plans. You know, that's okay to an extent, but, you know, I mean, life's great now. Life's great now. I mean, I'm in a great relationship, you know. I have what I need, you know, instead of everything, what I wanted all the time. In the past, you wanted a car, you go and take one, you know. I wanted your wallet, I'd go and take it. You know, and the next day I still feel empty. You know, I buy the biggest and nicest stereo and TV. The next day it'd be at the pawn shop. You know, I'm filling it up with something else now. You know, and it's not as expensive as I thought it would be. You know, it starts by, you know, admitting I'm an alcoholic. My life has become unmanageable, and I'm willing. Take the chance for today. Brent, thank you very much for asking me to speak. God bless you all.
Thanks very much, Ken, for that.